Bill Geist is a Midwesterner who made his name writing for the New York Times before he became a fixture on CBS News Sunday Morning. He's seen a lot of things throughout his years as a reporter, from the postman who delivers mail on horseback into the Grand Canyon to a roadkill chef in Kansas. And he tells some of those stories and many more in his newest book, Way Off the Road, Discovering the Peculiar Charms of Small Town America. It's published by Broadway Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought Bill Geist back to my show. Hi, you used to come here. People once accused me of being related to you in some way because you were on the show so much.
No, it was just the payoffs. It was just the cash.
What was your goal in writing this book? Are these all stories that you reported on CBS News Sunday?
Yes, there are stories, kind of my favorite stories from, I've reached the 20-year mark at CBS, which is appalling to me, but and just kind of there's a recollection of all the stories, and it kind of expanded on them. You have a lot more words to work with in a book than you do on a TV script, and so that was great fun going back and looking at it. And it's kind of some of the adventures along the way.
Well, Charles Kuralt was the host of the show when you started there, and these were the kinds of stories that he also liked to report on. Did you ever get in each other's way?
No, he actually hired me, and I think at that point, that was 20 years ago, 1987, and I think he was kind of tiring of the road and anxious to turn over the reins to somebody else. And they're a little different. They're kind of like Charles Kuralt on acid or something. Not quite that bad, but I mean, they're kind of my own version of Kuralt's.
Well, your title kind of references his famous book, Off the Road.
Yes.
You're way off the road.
That's true. Well, of course, his reference, Jack Kerouac and others. So there have been a lot of on the road. But yeah, it's off the road, definitely.
You say at the start that there are no politics in this book. Did you go to places where politics were unimportant?
They're not unimportant. They're just not talked about quite so much. The one thing I'm really proud of in this book is there were no public relations representatives offered any of these stories. They mainly came from viewers, and they're kind of avoiding politics. And I think we get enough politics on 24-hour cable news.
Well, there is one place where you couldn't avoid it, McAlester, Oklahoma. The preacher has a sermon in defense of war, but there's a good reason. McAlester is where bombs are manufactured.
Almost all bombs used in the world, and certainly
in the world, really.
We export bombs from McAlester. The bomb factory for the United States was placed in McAlester, Oklahoma during World War II because it couldn't be reached by anybody, but specifically by the Germans or the Japanese, and I'm here to tell you it's not easy to find today. But yeah,
you couldn't get close to that place.
No, you might hit the Walmart's about the biggest thing you could take out there.
So in visiting some of these places, I'd imagine you had to travel long distances from a town that whose name I might recognize.
Yes,
to a place that nobody seems to know anymore.
Exactly, Beaver, Oklahoma, or something out in the panhandle of Oklahoma. Yeah, we refer to these as fly drive, where you have to fly and drive, or fly drive, where you fly once and you fly on a smaller plane and then you drive. And we've been to towns with one person. Out in Manawai, Nebraska, this lady was the only resident of the town, and she was held every official position. And she actually was, by state law, had to post a thing for a public hearing on her budget every year. And then she'd have a hearing with herself.
And as the postmistress, she, oh, I got a letter.
Yeah. But it was very funny reading that only Manawai, Nebraska residents were allowed to come to this meeting, and she was it. So,
well, I imagine there are a number of towns in America that are facing that once were thriving but are on the verge of being ghost towns.
That's true.
In her case, she's doing something eccentric.
She's on the Great Plains, and the towns are emptying out. The town next door, they said you could just drive over and walk into a house and live there. A very nice home. So people, if real estate gets you down in New York, there's always Manawai, Nebraska.
You could double the population in no time.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about mortgages or anything.
Now, you use an RV. You drive in an RV.
Well, not all the time. We've done a couple of cross-country trips, like a 5,600-mile RV trip. And I can tell you, if you're going to go from New York, people always say to me, oh, you're so lucky you had the cross-country RV trip, which took a month because we stopped and shot pieces everywhere. But I my recommendation would be take in a few of the cornfields and then fly to Denver, because the cornfields, I grew up in the Midwest, and I can tell you that it gets a little dull. Once you've seen one cornfield, you've seen them all.
And once you've seen one Motel 6, you've seen them all.
Yes, we've stayed
there. Aren't some... holiday, even Holiday Inns get really boring.
Yeah, there we get out beyond the chain hotel territory to some very unusual places, like a place in Nevada that was a trailer cut in half was the motel.
Really? Well, there are a lot of trailer motels. I stayed in one in Kayenta once, and in the middle of the night, some rowdy cowboy decided to shake all of the trailers.
You're the first person I've run across that's ever stayed in a trailer motel. Yeah, this guy actually...
Well, you have no choice in Kayenta, I have to tell you.
Yeah. So we stay in some places. A lot of them kind of resemble prisons where you check in through a hole in the bulletproof glass and the steel door slams behind you and you're afraid you're going to have to go to a parole board to get out of the motel.
And why do you think that is? It's because the motel owner is afraid of being robbed in the middle of nowhere?
Apparently, yeah. By whom? I don't know. I mean, you could line up the entire town.
You live in Manhattan now. You grew up in the Midwest, yep. But you live in Manhattan now. And my experience has been often when I've traveled to the smaller parts of America, that the first thing people say to me is, you live in New York, you must be crazy. You have a gun? You know, and I'd never go to that place. And how do you deal with that? Because you have affection for the small town.
I do. It's true that they kind of think of New York as at its worst, which all of us do on some days. But yeah, it was a very dangerous place. A lot of them who've come here are very disappointed that there's no graffiti on the subway cars and that people aren't being gunned down in the streets. And so, quite often the murder rate in a place in the middle of Wyoming will be way up the list, way above New York. I mean, New York's got to pick up the pace a little bit. They're losing their reputation.
Well, we have to make some movies in which we look bad. That's what we've done in the past.
Exactly.
Is there anything peculiar about your hometown? Where did you grow up?
Champaign, Illinois.
Oh, well, that's fairly big place.
It's 60,000 people, and my parents had just moved from Fisher, Illinois, where I got my start, I guess, genetically, because my parents owned a country newspaper that covered towns like Oblong and Normal, Illinois. I always say I grew up near Normal.
Normal I've heard of, but Oblong? That's
Oblong,
a weird
yeah,
name.
My dad had a headline that he wrote. He had quite a sense of humor. And it said, Normal woman marries oblong man. So he had a lot of fun with that. I think that's why he covered the town, so he could write stuff like that.
Well, you give the population of the towns that you go to at the beginning of each section. Was there a population maximum for the towns you covered?
Well, we ran it. We had one problem. I had a story I wanted to include in the book, which is Discovering the Peculiar Charms of Small Town America is the subtitle. And we had Chattanooga, but it had such a homey story. They had about 400,000 people. But most of them had like two digits or something. But it had the Museum of Towing, so I couldn't very well leave that out of the book.
But there has to be some legitimate definition of rural in your mind.
It's kind of the character of the place more than anything. There are a couple places had like the illegal porch furniture town, I think, had like 14,000 people in it or something. Wilson, North Carolina, where we went out with a SWAT team of police inspecting porch furniture you couldn't have interior furniture on the front porch because it looked tacky and they were trying to encourage tourism.
These are the same towns that fine you if you haven't mowed your lawn on a regular basis.
Well, those are kind of snooty suburban towns. This
this just lawn.
You're right.
Furniture.
They would do the same thing. It's just most towns, people already kind of sense that they shouldn't put a couch, an inside couch with the stuffing coming out of the arms, that they shouldn't put that on the front porch. Yes, they'd be cited in Scarsdale, sure.
Bill Geis is here to talk about his latest book, which is called Way Off the Road, Discovering the Peculiar Charms of Small Town America. It's published by Broadway Books. Well, what about you showing up at these places? For example, you talked earlier about Elsie Eiler, the woman who lives alone in that town. Does she recognize you? Has she seen you on television?
I think she had, once.
But that would make it a lot easier to gain access, wouldn't it?
Well, kind of. There are a lot of these people, which is one reason I like them, and I think you would too, is they're not looking for publicity. Like Elsie didn't really want us to come, and I kind of had to say, well, we're going to be in the area anyway, so can't we just drop by? And of course, it was a four-hour drive from Omaha. So no one was going to be in that area. Indeed, it's in a place out on the Great Plains, which is emptying out. I mean, there are no people. People are all leaving, and the wildlife's moving back in, which is kind of interesting.
What do you do on those trips when you run out of gas or if you get hungry?
I don't know. The nearest motel is literally 2 hours away. Elsie has hamburgers and stuff there, which I thought maybe she'd sell one a month, being the only person in town. But it's kind of the farmers from around the area gather there. It's a community center, and they don't know what they'd do without her.
Your book reads a bit like a guidebook at times. There are sections on getting there, what to eat. Barbecue seems to be often the only solution, where to stay. And obviously getting there is driving in these cases, unless you have a helicopter.
A lot of driving. There's the flying, and then there's the driving, and there's the flying, driving, and renting cars that are kind of... Well, there might be a rental agency out in one of these towns that has like two cars, you know. And so when you rent it in Oklahoma and turn it in Texas in Amarillo, the guy gets very upset, you know, because his rental car is gone, you know.
Right. He has to wait for somebody to come with an
from
exchange,
back,
which
from
is
Amarillo,
unlikely.
Which doesn't happen for several years.
So you do write a lot about food. Are there places where you found really good meals?
That's a difficult thing. My favorite quote in the book is outside of Wichita, Kansas, this little crossroads where we found a motel, and I asked the concierge at the hotel, who was the only employee on the premises, where the best place to eat was. And it was my favorite quote in the whole book. He said, he thought about it for a while. He said, well, the best place to eat, it'd have to be the Texaco because the Shell don't have a microwave.
So when Jane and Michael Stern just extol all of these little places they just happen upon in the middle of nowhere, they're seeing a different America than you're seeing?
Well, it's good to have a map with stick pins stuck in it. There are some great, great restaurants. I mean, in Huntsville, Texas, we ran into this woman who started a barbecue to feed her husband, basically, who was painting the church. And indeed, he never saw any of the barbecue because it smelled so good and the smoke was billowing out and people were stopping. And so she's developed one of the best barbecues in the country.
Seems to me barbecue is the ubiquitous food around the country.
It's kind of anti-pretentious, you know, which is what these people like. But it's cheap.
But talking about anti-pretentious, what about the roadkill stew that you had?
That was a guy in Lawrence, Kansas, outside of Lawrence, Kansas, I try to maintain kind of a calm, dry demeanor and just let these people say what they're going to say. And this guy just broke out laughing because he made groundhog stew and kept a skull in it, sort of like a Georgia O'Keeffe work with the skull of the groundhog to prove its authenticity. And I said, well, where's it from? And he said, well, it's Highway 24, Michelin tires.
Michelin. So I could taste the difference.
So I just, yeah. I think he was name dropping with the Michelin tires, but yeah, I just broke up. He was so funny. He said his one rule, the only rule you have to adhere to with roadkill, was you had to beat the flies to it.
Well, it also reminds us that Kansas is one of those weird states that starts in the east and ends in the frontier, what used to be the frontier, and there are very different sensibilities in that.
There are very
state.
Different sensibilities, and as with a lot of states, I think Lawrence was the only state that we don't like to put any politics in the book, as we mentioned, but it was the only county in Kansas that went Democratic. I mean, a lot of times the college towns, whether it's Austin or Madison, Wisconsin, or something, and people say, "Well, no, I'd never go there," you know, because the unruly people.
But I want to talk about politics for a moment because
sure.
you can't avoid it when you're driving across the country. There are the billboards that tell you the attitudes of the local town, either with religious messages or political messages. And Kansas is a state that's changed an awful lot, as a best-selling book reminded us not that long ago, Tom Frank's book. And I wonder about the changing attitudes about the Midwest, an area you grew up in.
Well, I think, I grew up in Champaign, Illinois. It was a university town, but the central Illinois was a very Republican, conservative town. So I think when I talk about no politics in the book, it's kind of most people just don't bring it up as the first thing they want to talk about. And indeed, a lot of their views are more nuanced than just the billboard that you might see which kind of shocks you, something about the death penalty or getting out of the, there's still billboards out there, get out of the UN and all this kind of stuff. I mean, they're left over from the 50s, I think. But I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to say because I find a lot of anti-war sentiment out there. And
Now, the great majority of the country is against this war,
yeah.
Republican and Democrat.
But, I mean, some of their views are more difficult to predict than you would think.
Now, when you have driven around on the RV, which, of course, gives you all the comforts of home and you don't have to worry about...
That's debatable.
The best places to stay are trailer parks. are there better trailer parks?
Oh, yes. There's I've seen the gated trailer park, and they're the trailer parks. With
gated
the,
trailer parks?
Yes, a gated trailer park.
A bathroom next to every...
it's only for the hoi polloi. But, it's interesting because there are. I mean, they're the trailer parks with the RVs that cost $300,000 and $400,000, and then they're the ones on cement blocks that are sort of rusting out.
Are you, in writing this book, trying to encourage city dwellers to get out into the country?
Yes. I think they should get out and connect a little bit with it. It's a lot easier to connect with nature out in rural areas. I think a lot of people are finding out, I mean, just to take a break from urban areas. And I'm also encouraging people in the smaller towns to come to the city and see what that's all about.
And also giving them hints and tips as to how to attract tourists. Open a museum. Identify something distinctive about the community. Start a festival.
Right. We have a lot of interesting festivals. Yeah, I'm encouraging them, but also kind of talking about how these small towns attract people, because a dollar in a small town is worth a lot more than it is to the urban dweller who's spending it. And so we went to Mike the Headless Chicken Festival in Colorado, the Frozen Dead Guy Festival in Colorado, places like that.
We talk about the exchange rate with England and Europe, but never about New York and the middle of Colorado.
Well, we all realize that living in New York, that, I mean, you know, your salary only goes about half as far as it should.
One of the most fascinating stories in the book is about the Land of Lost Luggage, the unclaimed baggage center in Scottsboro, Alabama. I knew about Scottsboro in Arizona, but there's one in Alabama?
There's one in Alabama.
Do they have spas, too? Or just
no,
lost
they do
luggage?
Not have spas. They have the Lost Luggage Center, where virtually all of the lost luggage in America and now internationally is purchased by the pound. They say, you know, the airlines say, well, they search diligently to put you back together with your lost bag, sort of like O.J. searching for the murderer. Mm-hmm. And then it's sold to this man down in Alabama who resells it. And they're sinks, they're wedding gowns, they're trombones, they're everything you can imagine in this store.
Another story you tell is about the Viking cooking range, and that you won an Emmy for.
Yeah, it's basically about this guy in Greenwood, Mississippi, Fred. Fred Carl, who invented the Viking range and was encouraged to go to Atlanta or someplace with it, but stayed in this small town and used the proceeds to, I mean, he hires like 1,000 people in this impoverished area and he's remaking the town. And so it was kind of a nice story about a local guy who thinks big.
Well, he also does think nationally and internationally, because the Viking people are deeply involved in the national food scene. They're major sponsors of the James Beard Awards.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first Viking range was purchased by a woman in Greenwich Village who wanted a big range. I was fascinated just by why people want these immense blast furnaces in their kitchens, you know. And Fred thought the same way that his wife wanted one, and he thought other people would too, and it turned out he was more than right.
And it's turned into a major business.
Major business, and it's still based right there in Greenwood, Mississippi.
Now, this is your sixth book, but there's been a big gap between the last two.
I blame that on CBS.
Oh, really?
They have me running all over the place, keeping me busy. Well, it's better than the alternative, they tell me, and The Sunday morning show is doing really well, and it still gets 5 million viewers, which is more than the early show or the Letterman show or any of that. So,
do you think it's because it does focus? It's a real magazine show, and you get a real sense of the best that the American culture can provide. But then you also get this other very homey kind of view of America.
Yeah, well, I think the thing I add to it is getting out the shoe leather, you know, kind of getting out and flying across the country and landing in these small spots. But yeah, I think it's succeeded. It's been on for 28 years, and I think it just captures the right tone for a Sunday morning when you kind of don't want to be yelled at.
Well, when you arrive at these places, do you think of yourself as that guy who grew up in Champlain, or do you think of yourself as somebody who's lived in New York for the last 25 years or so?
I never think of myself as the person who lived in New York for the last 25 years or so. I wrote,
you lived almost half your life? Or
I know. More than half, no. It's not quite half, unfortunately. But no, I mean, I came to New York and wrote the About New York column when I knew less about New York than anybody else. But
that was part of the fun, Bill.
That was part of the fun of it. And I think people outside of New York enjoyed it more than those inside.
Because we knew where you were making mistakes, but that was okay.
Yeah. Or there'd be the old codger sitting across the desk from you. Yeah, that's a great, I thought I'd discovered something in New York, and says, yeah, that's good. That's almost as good as the one we did on it 5 years ago and 15 years ago and 25 years ago.
Now, you're going to be giving a talk as part of the Bryant Park Word for Word series?
I'm told. Yes.
That's tomorrow, 12:30, at the Bryant Park Reading Room on 42nd Street and 5th Avenue. And you don't prepare for that?
Not really. I mean, I wrote the book. And I find a lot of people are... I'll prepare something, yeah, of course, but not so much. I mean, people are interested to hear what I've found out in the small towns of America and ask me questions about how I go about it and so on. So it usually works out.
Well, everything that you're doing, in a way, is about interacting with people, whether it's in New York or in the small towns.
It's true. I mean, I think somebody pointed this out. I don't make observations on what I do very often, but, I mean, just kind of connecting with people and bringing, I mean, the same kind of humanity exists with somebody who lives in the middle of Manhattan as lives in Manhattan, Kansas, or something.
Meanwhile, Bill Geist's latest book, his seventh, following, what do we have so far?
Foreplay, Little Learning to Play Golf.
And Little League Confidential, The Big 5-0, Fearing, Facing, and Fighting 50, City Slickers, and Four, which was also about golf, Monster Tracks, and Hair in a Can. Well, I can't go
Hair in a Can, right.
But I want to thank you so much for being with us. And by the way, if you want more information about what Bill will be doing tomorrow at the Bryant Park Word for Word series, that's 12:30, you can go to our website, look at our show page at wnyc.org. And thank you so much for being with us again, Bill. Bill Geist, Way Off the Road, Discovering the Peculiar Charms of Small Town America. It is published by Broadway Books, and I hope you're back to writing books. You think so?
I think so. I love writing books. It's hard to write them sometimes in coach on an airplane when they put the seat back. But
you have to start traveling in that RV again.